Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. Is the uproar over American national security documents at Trump's home a serious crime or a political witch hunt? Let's get to the bottom line. For the first time in American history, the FBI executed a search warrant on the home of a former president last month. The federal agents were retrieving sensitive White House documents from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, some marked as top secret. Now the Justice Department is investigating whether Trump broke the law by keeping them and by obstructing their work by claiming that he returned all the files. Trump says the whole thing has been blown out of proportion to serve the Democratic Party before the midterm elections a few weeks from now. He sued the government, and a judge that he appointed stalled parts of the investigation and authorized an independent third party to filter out materials that Trump has the right to keep private. Confusing. So what's next? And what are the chances that a former president will be charged with federal crimes? Today we're talking with Brian Greer, a lawyer who worked in the CIA's Office of General Counsel, where he was a member of the Senior Intelligence Service and worked on the classification of national security documents. And Khadija Goba, a politics reporter for Semaphore, a new media company that, in full disclosure, I'm also affiliated with, and formerly with BuzzFeed, where she covered Congress and national politics here in Washington, D.C. Brian, let me just start out with you and ask you, when it comes to the president and national security documents, what is the line between right and wrong?
Well, our whole system is set up with national security in general and in classification in particular to assume that the president's going to be acting in the national interest, that he's going to be acting with the public interest at heart, not private interest. And so it gives him or her maximum leeway to do that.
So you're saying there's an assumption involved there. There's not a legal responsibility that the president is going to behave this
way. That's
right. There's an assumption.
Yes.
How can we, in a nation of rules and laws, be assuming anything?
It's difficult to with President Trump, for sure. The classification system was set up to govern not only what the president does, but what all employees who work for him do. And there's very specific rules in place on what employees like me, when I was at the CIA, had to do in regards to handling classified information. But a lot of those rules don't apply to the president because, again, they assume the president's going to be acting in the public interest. Here, we don't have that. And so everything sort of goes out the window when it comes to things like, did he declassify the documents? So we're a little bit in the Wild West, but we still have very clear criminal statutes that apply to both government officials and private citizens, like former President Trump, about handling and mishandling classified information. And that's where now former President Trump has gone over the line.
So before I jump to Khadija, I want to get this. Can the President of the United States declassify documents at will? And if he can, doesn't that allow Khadija Goba and myself and the public? Because presidents don't declassify for themselves. They declassify for the public. So help me solve this riddle.
Yeah, it is quite a riddle. And I did see a lot of things put out at first that were just frankly not true on both sides of this issue. And that's why I felt compelled to speak up. The president does have very broad declassification authority. And a lot of people are saying at first is, well, no, there's a process in place that he has to follow. There's really not. I can speak from experience being involved in presidential declassification.
So decisions. If he has a file on Emmanuel Macron's sex life, which some people are saying he might have, maybe it's speculation, right. He can declassify. He can take that home, declassify that. But that's what you're saying is there's no process. But what is the requirement? How do people know it's declassified?
Well, that's what normally, this goes back to my first point of, the system assumes good faith in acting in the public interest. Almost every time I can think of a president has declassified information, they do so because they want to release it to the public. That's why we've never had these debates before. The president of bin Laden wants to declassify the bin Laden raid almost immediately. He gives a speech right away to the public. Joe Biden recently declassified some documents about 9/11 and Saudi Arabia's involvement. He signed a public order to declassify that information. So normally it's provided immediately to the public because...
So when President Obama had the documentation around the bin Laden raid and Osama bin Laden was killed, he took conscious, deliberate steps to declassify that material and put that out into the public.
I would think he did almost immediately upon hearing confirmation that bin Laden had been killed. My point there is I don't know for sure, but I seriously doubt that he sat there and signed a piece of paper saying, I hereby declassify this. He decided just to do it. And the presidents do have much broader leeway than any other federal employee in this regard. But there has to be evidence that it happened. And that's what's completely lacking here. The Trump team has had, I count, three opportunities to claim that this information was actually declassified before some sort of agency or tribunal. There's the National Archives, who they talked to for a year, where it would have been very relevant to tell them that. They never did. There was the Department of Justice, who they've been talking to since April or May. They never once told them. And then now there's the proceedings before the Judge Cannon in Florida. Never once did they claim that there. Why? Lying to any one of those three individuals is a crime and could get you in quite a bit of trouble. Lying on TV, not a crime.
What do you think President Trump may have been doing with? I mean, we know that President Trump didn't even like getting security briefings. He didn't like intelligence briefings. Mm-hmm. He was bored by them. And so the notion, I mean, that's the first thing I saw, that they found literally hundreds, if not more, classified documents. These were documents that he reportedly, from anyone I talked to on his team, had zero interest in. So what's afoot?
Yeah, I mean, that is the million-dollar question here. We don't know that why. The Department of Justice may know that, and that's going to be the key question they want to solve. Just to be clear, for any other federal employee, if you had that many classified documents at your house, and particularly...
If you had these documents in your house, what would happen to you?
Initially, I would certainly get my house searched. There's no question about that. And then I think they'd quickly try to determine what was my intent, what was my purpose. That volume alone would at least support some sort of inference of malintent, and might result in me as a normal federal employee receiving charges given the volume and sensitivity of those documents. So I think that standard probably is met here, particularly because he was given two opportunities to return them. That's what's key here.
So tell us about that, because that's an element here with regard to the issue of declassification, of the president asserting that these documents were treated differently. Earlier, his staff, his lawyers had signed documents that they had returned everything that they had, and that you made the point in your tweets that they did not say that they had declassified any of these documents. Is that an important part of this story?
I think so, for sure, because, again, you would, if you're the Trump team, you want to tell that story first to the National Archives, which is the entity that first requested those documents, because you know, if you're smart, that the second they get a classified document in their position, they're going to go refer it to the Department of Justice for prosecution, which is exactly what happened. So you would have told them. You certainly would have told the Department of Justice, because you would not have wanted all this to transpire. And again, you would convey that to Judge Cannon in Florida, who's overseeing the special master proceedings, because it would be highly relevant to her if there was some question about the classification of these documents. That might be an issue for the special
master. We throw these terms, special master. This is not Dungeons and Dragons. This is do you know anything about special master, Kadia?
The closest thing is, if I could think about the Mueller report and how special prosecutors were brought in. But it speaks to what the public knows about this, right? They just think...
Well, we have a global audience right now wondering, what is a special master? Why is a special master in this? Trump wanted one. I think most of the rest of the commentariat did not want one. A judge appointed by Donald Trump gave this leeway to say, yes, we must have a special master in place because of the acknowledgement by the Department of Justice, in part, that some of the documents may be covered by what's called executive privilege, which means documents that are, sorry to take you in the weeds with this, folks, but that are privileged and not public because they involve private communications between the president and other people within regard to doing his work. So given that, is this an appropriate action by this judge, or is this a partisan effort or a favor that the judge is giving President Trump?
We have to see if everything is going to be fair and just moving forward. But some of the criticism has been around this decision and her just deciding, well, yeah, he has some level of executive privilege and... even post-presidency, and I'm going to respond in that way. So that's what I've been hearing as some of the criticisms around her decision.
Brian, my reading of the judge's decision is it wasn't all a slam dunk for Donald Trump, that she did not agree to return the documents to him. She did not agree to stop all the parts of the movement, particularly the damage assessments of the potential damage assessments of these top secret documents. What is your judgment of the judge's action? Because there are a lot of people in a partisan way that have already been slamming her. Do you think she's credible or not?
I mean, I don't think we should be focusing on the fact that she's a Trump-appointed judge or might be politically motivated. I like to look at this on the legal merits. And there, I think her opinion is lacking in many different ways. And so I do agree with a lot of the substantive criticisms. And there's even more out there that people haven't really focused on yet. You mentioned she sort of tried to split the baby by saying the intelligence community's assessment of these documents could go on, but the criminal investigation with respect to these documents needed to stop. To me, that doesn't make sense in a couple ways. Mm. One is, let's say the intelligence community gets a document. It's very sensitive. It has potentially source revealing or collection right. method revealing information about it. Their first question is going to be, who saw this document? When? Under what circumstances? The intelligence community can't answer that for themselves by law for very good reasons. They need the FBI to do that. So then they go call up the FBI and say, hey, can you tell us this? The FBI, while this special master proceeding is going on, is going to have to say, no, I'm sorry, we're not allowed to engage on these potentially privileged documents right now. That alone is something that could hinder this IC assessment that's going on. It also just doesn't really make sense to me that she would permit that to go on, but not the criminal investigation, which I would argue is just as important and, in fact, could lead to more discoveries of other damage to national security. The FBI is the one who's going to discover, you know, people are speculating what was in those 43 empty folders, right? Maybe there were just other documents in the room, but maybe those are somewhere else now. The FBI needs to be able to do its job in maximum leeway going forward.
Qadiya, recently at the end of August on Fox News, Lindsey Graham made this following statement, said if there's a prosecution of Donald Trump for mishandling classified information, there'll be riots in the streets. So this is obviously a politically infused moment. It matters not just in the legal sense that Brian is outlining here, but in the way people look at political winners and losers and actions of what's going on. Now, I remember very well when Donald Trump was running for presidency the first time, and the big issues were Hillary's emails and Benghazi and, you know, various issues like this. And I'm just interested in how we can have such a voluminous amount of classified information in the private residence of Donald Trump and see many Americans, Lindsey Graham says, are going to go to the streets and protest if he's indicted. What kind of contradictions is the American public holding in its head at the same time?
And that mirrors exactly what's the division within the American public, right? Democrats or people on the left are chomping at the bit and think that this is going to be the last straw and Trump is, this will stop him from going, you know, running for president or get him arrested.
So they think this is great.
Absolutely. Most Democrats. On the right.
And the Republicans said, this is great.
And on the right, it's the polar opposite where they are suggesting this is a witch hunt and that, you know, you even see it, like I said earlier, playing out in the legislative or the congressional, in Congress, where Republicans are already gearing up for next session, 118th Congress, and deciding that they're going to base most of their committees on investigating the Department of Justice or anyone that has persecuted the former president in the past. So this is not changing. What will be interesting is the independents, who are just sick of the noise and who don't want to hear about a former president or someone they voted for going to prison or being indicted. This is, and let's not forget, this isn't the only thing that former President Trump is facing right now. So it'll be interesting to see if there's enough fatigue around that where it matters in the midterms.
Well, Brian, I mean, I know this is a political question, but, you know, for a while, Qadiya and I were kind of covering the malaise about Donald Trump. We sort of saw Fox News, you know, sort of a home base for a lot of Trump-supporting news watchers, kind of slowly divorcing themselves from Trump. And then this raid happened. It's very hard, if you were to be a novelist or write a great screenplay with a thriller movie, to imagine how you would reverse Donald Trump's growing irrelevance, that, you know, fading star, and bring it back, other than having this massive raid on his home. And I'm just interested in the political. I mean, you're being attacked and celebrated all at the same time. But do you feel the right? I mean, we're talking about Donald Trump, and we barely mentioned President Biden. You know, just Qadiya did once. But I mean, we're talking about Donald Trump. He's stealing the air in the room again from every other possibility. What do you feel like this has done to restore the possibilities that he'll return in 2024?
Yeah, I would certainly defer to Qadiya on this and you as well, but it's certainly going to put him at the forefront. I mean, it has put him on the forefront. That is all we're talking about today. We're not talking about other economic issues or national security issues. I do think, though, that even though it's given the public an amazing, transparent view on how these investigations work, it's actually really unfortunate that it's playing out in the public the way it is. Criminal investigations should be kept private for very good reason. You don't want to, A, unfairly tarnish someone, But it's important for the Justice Department to be seen as being apolitical, to be allowed to do its work, because they may ultimately conclude this without charging him. In my opinion, while they had no choice but to carry out that search, which obviously did raise the profile a little bit, it's Donald Trump responding who has been the one to ratchet up all the rhetoric, to go to court over this. So he's the one who's, let's not lose track of the fact, he's the one who's making this into a political issue, at least initially, not necessarily the Department of Justice or the Biden administration.
So I'm sure you're in a situation now where your tweets have become so prominent that maybe folks are sending you information covertly or privately to sort of share with you where it's at. I think the thing that really interests me is a tweet that you had that's saying he had a lot of memos that were confidential, that were not top secret. They were just nuanced. Maybe they were Kim Jong-un love letters, whatever
right.
it may be,
right.
that they were keepsakes or small things, which hasn't really been part of this story very much. I'm interested in the degree of maliciousness. Now, a lot of people who are thinking the worst of President Trump, you know, thinks that he wants to take Macron material and put it in Vladimir Putin's hands so that other people have leverage over global leaders.
Right.
Now, that, folks, is entirely speculation on other people's parts, not my own. They look at Donald Trump as someone who is not interested in information unless there's a transaction involved. Is there any evidence whatsoever that is out there right now that Donald Trump was a transactionalist with any of this information?
Well, we don't know. And, you know, we don't know because we don't know what's behind all these redactions and these documents.
But will you hold that up again? These black lines are things we can't read under. Okay,
right.
Okay.
When I was at the CIA, I was someone who would apply and defend.
So there's only a heading on that paper,
yes.
right? Yeah, okay.
When I was at the CIA, I was someone who would apply and defend redactions like these.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I learned from watching sort of public reaction sometimes is people can try to guess what's behind there, but there's really, it's difficult to guess and it's a pretty dangerous game to guess. So I would say, like, it's difficult to know what's behind there. But I think knowing the Department of Justice and knowing even some of these prosecutors, how small C conservative they are, they're not going to stick their neck out. They know what uproar this is going to create. I think it's fair to assume they have very direct evidence in that by now, at least, they know. They've looked before the judge halted them. They'd had time to look through these documents. They know, is there a potential story to tell? Are they related? Are they just random, right? Did it look like he just randomly compiled some documents, in which case, still a crime, but there's not a story to tell? Or are they all related? Are they all about, or is a significant chunk about Macron or North Korea or Saudi Arabia? If they see that combined with all the information that we don't know, and they have a story to tell, then I think it is going to be very bad for Donald Trump.
Khadija, let me ask you. You noted that Donald Trump has called the FBI vicious monsters. And we don't know what will happen in the upcoming midterm elections in November of 2022, but a lot of people speculate that historically the opposition party to the president at that moment comes back pretty strong, and a lot of people suspect that the Republicans may take control of the House. How much of this do you think is going to become part of the agenda of an ascendant Republican leadership in the House? And what do you think that will do to the country when you're calling the FBI vicious monsters, particularly, you know, after we saw Blue Lives Matter, Law and Order as a response to the president's complaints about Black Lives Matter, et cetera. What do you think is going to happen in that discussion?
It's a great question. We talked about the president gaining a bump for 2024. What's not working in favor of Republicans is they don't get an opportunity to talk about inflation, higher gas prices, or any of that, because Donald Trump has sucked all the air out of the room. So this is not great for Republicans trying to gain back the Senate, trying to gain back the House. I do think they'll take the House, but this makes it very sticky. Republicans have talked to me privately and said they haven't been on TV in two weeks because they don't want to talk about, they don't want to answer that question. So that's a big thing going into November midterms, that they don't want to talk. They don't want to be asked about President Trump and the FBI investigation. Doesn't give them big fodder for the upcoming midterms. And like I mentioned before, if the House does secure, if Republicans secure the majority in the House, you're going to see all investigations. They're totally going to pivot. I think they're in a precarious position right now, though.
Brian, let me ask you a meta question just as we get close to wrapping this up. And it's really about secrecy in America. And very prominent and interesting writers like Dana Priest of The Washington Post you know, have written about the intelligence industrial complex, how sprawling and big and unaccountable it is. I remember when Bill Casey was head of the CIA under President Ronald Reagan, he was a big advocate of growing the boundaries of official secrecy. And, you know, despite what many people think, I didn't see President Obama or President Clinton really walk back that official secrecy very much. How much have we had to acquiesce to the fact that there's this whole other secret world out there that the average public doesn't have a right to? And that's part of what's going on in this discussion about what's secret and what's not, and what should be legally actionable. Has the intelligence community and its enforcers, like the FBI, overstepped its bounds too much?
There may be some cases where that's true. I certainly don't think this one, as we've talked about, is that case. You know, I think about this issue, if we're going meta for a second, is what do we want the CIA and the NSA and the other intelligence community elements to do? What I think Congress gives money to the CIA for is to go steal secrets. Same thing with NSA. So when it's discovered, like through the Snowden disclosures, that the NSA was really, really, really good at stealing secrets, to me, I get why that's newsworthy, but that should not necessarily be scandalous. That's what it's paid to do. But the disclosure there was, putting aside the U.S. person issue that he disclosed, which I think is a separate issue, but in terms of their overseas intelligence collection abilities, that's what they're supposed to do. And the only way the NSA can do that effectively and the CIA can do that effectively is by doing it in secret and by being able to promise to its sources and its foreign partners, which can include foreign governments, that we will take those secrets to the grave. What's happened here with President Trump has sort of yet again caused people to question that, and I think that's why it's so troubling. But certainly that doesn't mean all secrecy is good or that the U.S. government has drawn the line the right way. They have it, and that's one of the reasons I'm trying to speak out a little bit is to explain the aspects that I'm talking about, how these prosecutions work. We can be transparent about that. There's nothing necessarily secret about that, and it's important for the American people to understand that, particularly how professional it is done typically.
Khadija, finally, you know, gut reaction, how likely is it that Donald Trump ever sees a day in jail for any of this?
Oh, I see. I think very unlikely.
Brian?
I don't like making predictions. Like I said, if they can tell a story, I think it's much more likely that we'll see charges. But we've also seen numerous senior officials get off in the past.
Well, I'd like to thank Brian Greer, his former lawyer at the CIA, who handled classification issues there. Thank you so much for joining us. Khadija Goba, political correspondent for Semaphore. Congratulations on your new role there. And I'm looking forward to working with you. So thank you both very much for joining
us
today. So what's the bottom line? The one silver lining in all this drama is it underlines the thing that really makes America strong. No one is above the law. Whether you're the poorest and meekest person in the United States or you're a billionaire and a former president of the nation, you do have rights, but you will also be held accountable if you mess with the law. I'm not sure that former President Donald Trump learned that lesson in elementary school. The fact that he simply took boxes and boxes of documents of the highest classification, some potentially a risk to U.S. national security if they fell into the wrong hands, is still so baffling. Maybe he really believes that the rules don't apply to him. But there are two takeaways here. First is hypocrisy. Trump spent a lot of energy during his campaign accusing Hillary Clinton of being reckless with national security documents. And he made her private email server that sat in her bathtub, famous. And second is, America gives its leaders a huge amount of leeway to do what they need to do, and the law is not black and white for them. Trump is popular for breaking the mold and using his presidential powers, but he also exposed a lot of gray areas that need to be severely diminished. And those are the bottom lines.